Good evening, everyone. Welcome. This is a Mount Prospect School District 57 Board of Education meeting for February 21st. It's 7:03 p.m. Virginia, would you take the roll, please?
Member Chung?
Here.
Member Capasto? Member Kobus?
Here.
Vice President Walsh?
Here.
Member May? Member McCluskey?
Here.
President Sonnenfeld?
Here. So our first order of business is communications. We have various reports. I understand, Vicki, you attended an NSSEO meeting?
Yes. So the NSSEO, their last meeting was Wednesday, February 6th. So this month's shining star was a fifth grader named Hannah. So since the age of three, Hannah had been attending the Deaf and Hard of Hearing elementary program at Riley Elementary School. But this year, she transitioned to Westgate Elementary in Arlington Heights, where she now attends full-time, but she has a dedicated sign language interpreter. So at the meeting, Hannah was recognized for her self-determination and her academic achievement. And someone had asked her earlier to share something that she was proud of in terms of making that transition to the D57 school. And she said that she was most proud of being able to make friends at her new school because she feels like she's shy and that it's hard for her to make friends. So it was just very inspiring and wonderful to see Hannah and her family there. Some big news. So a couple days before the NSSEO board meeting, they announced a major change at Kirk and Minor. So as you know, right now, both Kirk and Minor schools serve students ages 3 to 21. But starting in August, Minor School will serve students from early childhood through 8th grade, and then Kirk School will serve students in high school and then through their transition to age 21. So it's a very big change for them. They had mentioned that something that they've noticed over the past few years is that the needs and supports at both schools have seemed to become more and more similar, so they felt that this change would allow NSSEO to better maximize their resources and serve the students. And then since that board meeting, they've held several meetings and forums to share the news and solicit feedback from parents and staff and community members. They're currently finalizing the members of the Kirk Minor Transition Committee, which will focus on transition activities, student and building needs, professional development, and communication. And then lastly, they're having their second annual legislative roundtable Friday, March 8th. So it's 9 to 11 o'clock at the NSSEO Central Office. If anyone's interested in attending, I think the RSVP deadline is March 1st. So please let Brian know. And their next meeting is Wednesday, March 6th at 7.
Okay, thanks, Vicki. Do we have an Ed Foundation report?
She covered Brian, I covered her. I did the Education Foundation meeting, and I did not have to take notes, though. That's her job at that one. They were talking about the event that's April 6th coming up and the potential funded causes that they might do, which one. They had two choices. One was interactive TVs, and they want to possibly get one for each school and have it in the LRC, but they're TVs where the kids can either get on the internet, they can write on them, or you know, touch screen, and it's just an interactive TV that they can use, which sounds like a cool concept. And then there's also the other idea was to enhance security cameras. So what we do as a board with putting security cameras outside to enhance that with either putting an additional camera either in the hall or another additional cameras outside, that was another idea that they had. Those are the two things, and their next meeting should be March 6th, I believe. They might have to move it, though. And that was pretty much it. We were able to get out of there, like you.
All right, thanks, Eileen. Any PTO reports?
I have one. Vicki, before I forget, I have a basket for you for the gala, so it's in my car. I went to the Lions Park PTO, which was Monday, February 4th. They talked about, similar to my last update, they still have openings for various roles within the PTO, co-president, secretary, and treasurer. So they were going to continue to try to solicit parents to volunteer for those open roles, and there'll be more information coming. They also talked about an author visit that was February 13th. The winter dance was February 1st, and so at this meeting they just talked about the success of it, which my daughter and I were there. It was really a lot of fun. And then also just upcoming events, the Fun Fair is March 9th. The STEM Fair, I believe, is March 21st. They also talked about ways to potentially, for future meetings, to have potentially maybe a web meeting. They were trying to talk about how to have parents more involved or to get more information about their monthly PTO meetings. And so they were trying to talk about, can they do some type of web or podcast, or how could they get them just more opportunities for parents to be able to hear information. So they didn't land on anything, but they were just trying to brainstorm. And that's all I have.
Okay, thanks, Jen.
Sure.
Anyone else, PTO meetings? Okay. And then for my report, the only thing I have to mention is that we don't have agenda items for March 7th, so there won't be a need to meet. We can cancel that meeting. And then moving on, this is our first opportunity for community comments. So we welcome and appreciate anyone who'd like to share their ideas or concerns with the board. If you have a question at this time, I may not be able to provide you with a thorough and accurate answer. So I may have administration get back to you. And to really streamline the time, you could submit your questions on the table in the back. There's a box that's back there, and then someone will get back to you. So that's it. And would anyone like to address the board at this time? Please step up to the microphone and identify yourself.
Good evening, Stan Konecki, Lyons Park resident. Just a couple of questions and a couple of issues. I have a couple of emails to Dr. Allmiller and to Mr. Parisi, and they were responsive to those emails. I just wanted to bring up what I came to the last board meeting, and there was a rather robust discussion on class size, whether that was policy, whether it was guidelines, and exactly where the board should come out on setting those issues. But it wasn't on the agenda. And these are very important things that would have gotten a lot more interest from parents if it was on the agenda and knew that that discussion was going to be had. So I think that, again, I don't know why it wasn't on the agenda. I don't know why it came up in discussion.
That policy discussion that was on the agenda.
There was a specific item about class sizes on the
agenda. Instructional groupings. That's the policy in the board policy.
Okay, well, you spoke about class sizes. I think that's what resonates mm-hmm. with the instructional groups. Well, it doesn't mean much to me, and maybe it does to other parents. But it was about class sizes. It was about policy. It was about guidelines. I just think it should have been on the agenda, better noticed. So I'm hopeful. Dr. Allmiller said that was going to make it in the minutes, and I think that should be a rather detailed explanation of where it came out and what different board members had different positions on that. So that's one comment. And then my second comment, last month we talked a little bit about the home that you're purchasing. That's going to be either used as a parking lot or to reconfigure when you add on to Lyons Park if that ends up being feasible. I'm dating myself a little bit, but I was around when the school was knocked down and rebuilt, and there was a home that was purchased. Okay, and that home that was purchased was turned into a parking lot. And the District's 57 presentation to the village for rezoning had a very detailed plan in terms of berms and trees to buffer the homes that are around that. Now, if you go there now, there are no trees there. It's very unneighborly. Every day and every night, the cars go in with their lights, and it's just not fair to those homeowners. So I'm just asking, when you consider that for the new parking lot, if that's the case, that you really consider a landscaping plan that is dense and protects those homeowners. And I'd also ask you to go out and look and to be a good neighbor and re-landscape what is there now in the current parking lot. Because it's just not, it's really not fair to those homeowners. So that's, I would also add that if it's going to be a zoning amendment, because it's going to have to go from residential to, I'm not sure what the code is, there are very strict requirements, and those have to do with compatibility, they have to do with values of the surrounding properties. So that buffer is not only a quality of life issue, but it's also being able to make those standards that are in the village code. So thank you for your time.
All right, thank you.
Hi, my name is Angie Martinez. I'm a parent of some children in the district. But first, I'd like to thank all of you for your dedication to our children, and I'm very appreciative of the quality of education my children are receiving. I recently read the one-to-one technology initiative to provide Chromebooks for fifth graders next year, and I'd like to share my perspective. I have two children at Lincoln that currently have Chromebooks and a fourth grader at Lyons Park, but also I'm a pediatric occupational therapist. I have over 20 years experience and 9 in the schools. I'd really just like to voice my opinion about this technology. I'm against providing Chromebooks for fifth graders. There's no way I can present all my reasons in 3 minutes, so I do have an email prepared that I'll be sending all of you that includes some articles with research and just some interesting facts about the use of technology and different things. So I'll send that out. I want to make it clear that I'm not opposed to the use of limited technology, and I think our technology staff has done a great job of integrating a lot of things in the classroom that make learning more interesting and fun for kids and more engaging. But with all things, the benefits must outweigh the possible detriment to our children. So the information that they've gathered that's coming in the email, it shows that comprehension is better with textbooks, that understanding and retention is improved with handwritten notes over typed notes, that writing by hand can also improve overall brain health, and that studies looking at the effects of technology are only just beginning, because it's a huge issue in our society today. So there's a lot of studies that are just beginning, and the long-term effects on neurological development, social development, mental health, and learning will not be known for a long time. But these areas are being impacted by screen time. There are many studies taking place about the use of technology in general and its negative impact on our children's development. So with these facts against overexposing our children to technology, I just want to make sure that we're looking at the benefits of providing the Chromebooks to fifth graders and what we as a district are hoping to achieve. I reached out to Dr. Allmeller and Mr. Hope, and I appreciate their response to me and that the standards that we use as a school district to follow with technology. And what I got was they have the opportunity to become designers and constructors of information ideas, and having one-to-one only increases those opportunities. But I'd like to understand how having one-to-one increases those opportunities and the justification that will be used by the board to determine if that one-to-one is beneficial for fifth graders. Are those benefits worth the risk to our children's development? Is there research supporting the use of one-to-one technology for children of this age? So I urge you to ask your district professionals. I understand we have a great technology staff, but the other professionals that might have a different perspective, the school psychologist, the occupational therapist, look at those professionals' opinions and weigh both sides before we provide this. So I guess the question I have tonight is, when and how does the board have an open discussion about it at a board meeting when they decide on this?
I don't know that this is going to come up for the board necessarily.
It's going to be on the strategic plan. They'll see it in May for approval.
Okay. So that, as Dr. Allmiller said, that this will be on the version of the strategic plan that will come up for approval in May. So that is when the board will have a further discussion.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your time tonight, and I appreciate you taking the time to consider both sides of the opinion. And I do, again, appreciate everything you do and our Lions Park and our entire district staff. So thank you very much.
And thank you for sharing your perspective on that. Thanks.
Good evening, my name is David Rowe. I'm one of four coaches at the Lincoln Middle School for the competitive robotics team. Ken Bray is here tonight, he's one of the other coaches and a variety of parents. This STEM program is a phenomenal program, and I'm gonna let the kids talk for just a minute before I come back and ask you, one, permission for us to go to the World Robotic Competition, and two, money.
Hello, I'm Aaron Bray. I go to Lincoln Middle School where this program's happening, and I'm in eighth grade. So what this program is, as in the name, it's building robots with Legos and then programming them to get points in a robot game Shane will tell you about.
Okay, hi, I am Shane. I also go to Lincoln Middle School. I am also in eighth grade, and the robot game is basically robot goes around this mat with a bunch of Lego objects on it. They have to complete missions to do with these objects, like this one. You just hit this hard enough so that it goes to the top. Simple stuff.
Hi, I'm Marina from Lincoln. I'm also in the program. So we also have another topic, which is project. It changes every year what the topic is. So this year it's into orbit, which is find a social or emotional problem or physical emotion or problem in space for long duration space exploration and come up with a solution to solve it.
Hi, I'm Effie. I'm in seventh grade. I'm also on their team. After we come up with a solution, we need to present it to a group of judges.
Great.
So the couple of parts they skipped over. The project is a very in-depth project that they coordinate with universities across the country, the National Aquaculture Association this year. They're developing a shrimp tank to grow shrimp in space. They have a provisional patent on the idea, and they're coordinating with professionals across the country to further develop this and create a prototype before we go to world. There are over 300,000 kids involved in this program, 30,000 teams around the world. Lincoln's team consistently is at the top of all of those teams over the last 12 years. This team has gone to world now 4 times out of 12 years. In the last 4 years, they've taken first, second, and third place at state out of 700 teams. This is something that it's underutilized as far as leveraging the value of just the success of the program. But also, I think if you are engaged in STEM programs and you want to promote STEM, have to promote the end result, which is going to world. It's a great opportunity for the kids, extraordinarily expensive. Last year we went to world, we spent about $14,000. This year the parents have already agreed to spend approximately $13,000 of their own money, transportation, housing alone. We're turning to you not for those items, but for the extra additional cost we have, $1,000 for registration. That's just the fee paid to the organization in order to register the team. Beyond that, we have various expenses in creating props and costumes and poster boards and printing, things of that nature that come up anywhere between. Last year we spent about $2,000, and that was really on the cheap. So we're looking for somewhere between $2,000 to $3,500. I believe a budget might have been circulated on that. So the amount that we're looking for is the $1,000 registration and anywhere between $2,000 to $3,500 to support the team to create all the props and the necessities they have for competition. I'll also add that this particular team, there are 4 kids returning to world that went there last year. Extraordinarily unusual to have teams return 2 years in a row to world. This is a group of kids that overachiever is an understatement for them. They are very, very successful, and it's a kid-run team. Although the parents coach it, the kids do all the work, and that's one of the guiding principles. So everything that they've done is really 100% their success. Thank you very much, and hopefully we'll be approved, and a little bit to carry us there too would be great. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Can I just add, first off, thank you all for coming here and giving that great explanation of this project. Like, I had no information, so really just enjoyed it. Is there a chance that we could just have them bring with their gadgets up here,
sure,
just to
and
see?
I
think that's cool.
If you want, I have a minute and a half video, too, to show you kind of a quick overview of the whole thing.
Soviet state. Wow. So we got first place robot and first place champion who allowed us to go to the world.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Right. And then this is a robot.
I don't want to break it. Am I
you
break
can't break it.
it's made out of solid Lego.
Okay, so I can't. Well, never know.
No.
Okay. And then what did you do? You just pressed it?
Sorry. Slam it now.
Oh my God, this is so cool.
So,
are you guys
so even though the tasks, so Jen, even though the tasks are very simple, they actually have to program that robot to actually do the mechanical activities,
yay,
drive it around a map.
Yes.
Wow. I mean, it's pretty intricate what they do, and this
so
robot
cool
performed super. You guys did great at State. I watched them at State.
Really?
Yeah.
It's not autonomous, so it's not remote control in any way.
Yeah, yeah.
They use coding to program the robot to achieve these tasks in a 3.5 minute time frame.
It's just very cool. Unfortunately, I have three kids, and none of them got into this, so I just kind of geeked out for a second. But very cool. Loved it. Thank you.
Thank you all very much.
I can answer any questions if you have.
Okay, thanks.
Go get them, shrimps.
Okay, then we're going to move on to staff reports, and the Lincoln robotics team is going to be discussed further in this section of the meeting. So I'm going to hand it to Dr. Allmiller.
Yeah, before I get to the preview of the FY20 staffing plan, I do have two FOIAs to report per requirements of Open Meetings Act and Freedom of Information Act. I have two FOIA requests to report. We received the first request on January 26, 2019 from Samantha Van Buren. She requested a copy of the PowerPoint that Adam Parisi presented at the January 24th board meeting that showed costs of Kids Corner and the lowering of Kids Corner fees. She also requested for at least the last 12 months the district's financials that show how other revenue is spent. We responded to her on February 4th and sent her the PowerPoint presentation. In addition, we sent her the 2019 official budget summary of revenues and expenditures. The second FOIA was received on February 11th, which was a commercial request from Bethany Simpson of Smart Procure. She requested for purchase order dates June 28, 2018 to current. Purchase orders, purchase date, line item details, line item quantity, line item prices, vendor ID, number, name, address, contact person, and their email addresses. We responded on February 13th and sent her two documents from Skyward that included the information she requested. Moving on, preview of the FY20 staffing plan. In your board packet is a summary of FTE from last year, the current year we're at right now, to what's proposed preliminary for next school year. I would point out, I'd welcome the board's discussion and any questions you have on this. I want to point out two aspects of this staffing plan. First, class size and section numbers. I also provided you a sheet that showed the proposed sections and class size ranges. On that list, they're all pretty much sitting between 22 to 25. There is one grade level. Next year's fourth grade here at Fairview that is an outlier, and it shows five sections of 26 and 27. That's currently four sections of 26 and one section of 27. This is where we found ourselves in a mire back in August with the same situation that occurred at Lyons Park when we hit 26 and 27 in a section. We ultimately opened up a section based on conversation that the board had at last month's meeting. I'd left this at 26 and 27, but I would point out that when we get to 26 and 27, we do hire instructional assistants to support those classrooms, so you'd be hiring three instructional assistants, and by the time you hire three instructional assistants, you've essentially covered the cost of another classroom teacher. We couldn't do that at Fairview this year. We had to do the classroom instructional assistants because we didn't have space. That won't be the case next year. You will have a classroom space where you could drop that up, open another section. It would drop the class sizes down to 21 and 22 based on projections. So I do want the board to wrestle with that one. And then the other aspect of the staffing plan I want to point out is that we are requesting a second assistant principal at Lincoln Middle School And when you're ready to discuss that, I will ask Adam and Paul to give some rationale for that request. With that, I'll let the board have their discussion and answer any questions you may have.
Comments, questions regarding the staffing plan? The proposed staffing plan?
So I just had, and actually it was related to the addition of the second assistant principal. Mm-hmm. It's basically changing the status of the role, basically, from what the role that's currently there.
The student service coordinator role, yes.
And what sort of a cost increase is that to jump from the student services coordinator to the assistant principal?
I'll have a better idea of that when we go into closed session for what I've proposed in the salaries increases. I don't have that in front of me right now.
Okay.
Jen.
So, Elaine, you had mentioned about the Lions Park classroom size, obviously. I believe, and it was fourth grade moving into fifth, right? It was a fifth grade section we added.
Fifth grade for this
what
year.
Was the fourth grade? Wasn't the fourth grade section or the fourth grade class the prior year a smaller size group? Wasn't that a large jump?
It was. It was actually what happened was we decreased from five sections down to four sections, and that's why the number went up.
Yeah, and the average five at those five sections, the average classroom was lower 20s. Is
yeah.
that fair to say? Do we know, and for this particular one for Fairview, is that similar where the classrooms, I mean, are they close to that 26, or are they going to feel similar where they had a closer maybe to 22 range? And now one section's going to have to jump up. Does it tell me that here?
It tells you that. Okay. If you take a look at Fairview for third grade for the 18-19 school year, they're at 25-26 this year.
Okay, got it.
It'll be increasing them to 26-27 based on projections.
Okay. So when you say based on projections, you don't actually have the registrations yet. You're just kind of presuming that grade level is going to increase?
Based on the enrollment projections that I provide the board in September of each year, that's what we use to build the staffing plan every year. And the projections are balanced against what current enrollment is. And right now the projections are still on target. There's no significant spike that the projection enrollment is not accounting for.
But if the board wanted to add a classroom teacher, I shouldn't speak for the board, but for myself, I think I wouldn't be comfortable adding a classroom teacher until we knew, in fact, that we were going to have that many students in fifth grade next year. I'm looking at five sections for the fourth grade sections.
Yeah, you won't know that for a fact until registration takes place. And then it could actually even be in the summer with new enrollments that come in.
Because I know we've added teachers before in the summer.
Yes.
When we actually knew the numbers coming in. And I'll just make the point, too, that last year we had that situation in Lions Park where, sections in the fifth grade rose to 27, and then we ended up adding a section, but that was unprecedented, and that was an exception to all past practice. I won't go into that because we had that discussion at length last meeting, mm-hmm. but it's always been consistent in the upper grades of fourth and fifth to allow classes to go as large as 26, 27, and then only when you have 28 to add a section. So I'm only pointing that out, and I won't get into a debate about whether it's advantageous for the students to be in a class of 22 versus 27. But
But the reason I'm pointing it out is for budgetary reasons. You know, I think that the board has to be careful about setting a precedent where, you know, we're going to add, where we're going to, you know, have class sizes in fourth and fifth grade as low as 21. That's not something that our budget can sustain going forward, in my opinion. On the other hand, if, you know, if those class sizes did get out of beyond that point of 27, you know, I would support adding a certified teacher. But I certainly would rather add a certified teacher than add a certified teacher and another administrator to the staffing plan. You know, it just seems to me, and I read the rationale in the packet, but it just seems to me that we're experiencing some incrementalism in expanding our administration in this district. You know, we added, you know, first we had like student services folks at the schools, and then we made them administrators, assistant principals, and thought, okay, we need to have an assistant principal at each building, and now we're talking about having two assistant principals at Lincoln. You know, I think I would be more comfortable should administration want to just restructure the administration at Lincoln and replace the current principal, assistant principal position with two, you know, lower paid positions. Because that's also another, you know, problem with adding administrators. You take, you have an assistant principal in this case who's being paid a salary for, you know, doing a good job and assuming certain number of responsibilities and receiving increases each year based on their performance. And then all of a sudden you add another administrator, and so the job duties of the original administrator are greatly decreased and alleviated, but you're still carrying the salary, the same salary that you did before. You know, I witnessed this when we opened Westbrook. We had two full-time principals at Fairview and Lyons Park, no assistant principals at that time, and each building probably had close to 600 students in each building. And we needed to open Westbrook, and we opened Westbrook, and we moved kindergarten and first grade over there. So the, you know, the workloads of the principals at Fairview and Lyons Park, it decreased significantly. You know, their student population went down by about a third, but you still had those salaries you were paying, and then you had another principal's salary you're paying at Westbrook. So just something to keep in mind that that adding, you know, salaries on top of salaries long-term is going to be, you know, it's going to significantly put downward pressure on your fund balances as you're going forward. So, and also the, you know, looking at the staffing plan, when you see an increase of two FTE, and for those in the audience, FTE is full-time equivalent, when you see an increase of full-time equivalent, it makes a big difference whether that FTE is a, you know, support personnel or an assistant principal, you know. So, as I said, you know, I would, given the choice, if we had a need to add a certified teacher for the fourth grade at Fairview, I would prefer to do that over adding another administrator at Lincoln. It's just my two cents. Yeah, go ahead.
So looking at the current projections, I mean, I want to say first, Elaine, thank you so much for including this. I mean, I know this is something that we talked about at the last meeting, and it's so helpful to see, you know, the current year's class sizes and number of sections, and then looking ahead to next year's projected class sizes and number of sections. And then in looking at some of your decisions, I mean, I think we definitely want to avoid having class sizes of 28, 29 kids, and it looked like every time, Elaine, you were faced with that decision, you opted to, you know, either add a section or keep the sections the same to avoid having class sizes that large, and I totally agree with that decision. I think, you know, right now, if these projections stand as is, I would support, you know, everything that you have in here, but kind of like Joe said, if, you know, maybe in a month, by the summer, we see that, you know, instead of 26 classes of 26, classes of 27, now we're seeing, you know, oh, 28, 29. I definitely think at that time we would want to add in, you know, a fourth grade teacher to bring, you know, to avoid having class sizes that large. And then I would say for the assistant principal, I know, I think we're going to hear a little bit more about it, so I would definitely want to hear, as Jerry said, you know, kind of the anticipated the anticipated salary of that and how it would and the duties and how that would weigh against what is happening right now at Lincoln.
In regards to class sections, I agree with Joe and Vicky on that one, to not set a precedent in changing it right now to the lower class size and wait and see as the summer registration progresses to see if it's needed to add a section. And I also agree with Vicky on knowing a few more details, salary-wise, things like that, before any kind of decision or possibility even of another assistant principal over at Lincoln. But I also want to ask the one question. You said in one piece of information that another reason for a possible assistant was because of para, because of administration, mm-hmm. that they would have to be an administrator in order to evaluate the teachers?
That's correct.
Okay. So I don't know that necessarily making one person then, if you were to get rid of an assistant principal and then have, you know, two jobs for that person, then you'd only have the principal to be able to do any type of evaluation for all the teachers. So that locks them down on specifically doing just that. So, and
I think you misunderstood what I said. Oh. I would still be in favor of having two assistant principals,
okay,
but at a lower pay grade than our current assistant.
Okay,
principal.
That didn't yeah. seem like that came across.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Can I sure just add one thing? I definitely think to Eileen's point, the requirements continue to change year over year, and so I think what's being tasked, although I'm not a teacher or principal in the buildings, what's being tasked and required from a state and legislative perspective, you know, just seems to keep increasing, and what that means for the building to maintain that, I think can be difficult at times. I know we've had both Lions Park and Fairview, we converted them to an assistant principal. I would love to get their perspective, because from my perspective, I think it's been a fantastic addition. They do an excellent job, you know, notwithstanding. I think it's been, I'm sure if you pulsed the principals at both schools, they would say that they're needed and greatly appreciated. So I just think it would be also helpful just to kind of get their feedback, since we've gone through that process and now looking to do similar, where we're converting, you know, more of the student services into that role. I think we should just get some information. That would be helpful.
At this point, I'm going to ask Adam and Paul if you want to come up with him to go through the rationale for that second assistant principal.
Thank you. Good evening. So first, I think it's important as part of the rationale to just provide a little bit of the history and in where we, how we got to this point. So we'll take us back a few years ago to August of 2016. That was the time when the district had two of its psychologists leave in the beginning of the school year. The district faced a significant dilemma at that time, and after taking a look at the shortage of psychologists and the daunting task of being a psychologist, that is when the student service coordinator positions were created. And what those positions were is it allowed individuals with a special education background to be able to sit in on all of those individual special education responsibilities, IEPs, 504s, but did not have the evaluation hat. That is what was put into place in 16-17. Two student services coordinators, one at Lincoln and one at Fairview, and then they were able to use those two psychologists that they currently had at the other buildings. Moving into the following year, the student services coordinator at the elementary schools was eliminated and replaced with an assistant principal. So that's when we moved to the model of assistant principals at Westbrook, Fairview, and Lyons Park. And the idea being is one half of those jobs were those special education components that were previously performed by the student services coordinator and some of the psychologist duties, and then per the para requirements, being able to do all of the evaluations. That was in place for 17-18, that was in place for 18-19. At the time, the student services coordinator seemed like a position that may do. It wasn't the best, but we were able to accomplish, you know, what we were able to accomplish. However, there's because of para, there's still a lot of the evaluation challenges that exist over at Lincoln with a slightly larger population. So I'm gonna show just a few data points and just talk through those, and then I'm gonna hand over to Mr. Siminski, who's gonna get into a little bit more specifics. Mr. Hope, if you could give me just the administrator to student ratio first. The second one. If you could blow that up. So one thing to look at from a comparison standpoint is the administrator to student ratio between Westbrook, Fairview, Lyons Park, and Lincoln. Currently, at a ratio of 1 to 382, Lincoln does have the highest. If Lincoln had two assistant principals, it would put that ratio at 1 to 255. Lyons Park is currently at 239, and Westbrook's at 257, and Fairview is at 281. Adding this assistant principal would put that ratio in line with the other buildings. The second column is talking about the administration and certified staff ratio. This is where the evaluations play a major role. Currently, Lincoln has 29 FTEs to one administrator, where Lyons Park has 17.9, Fairview is 19.5, Westbrook has 17.1. If Lincoln added this position or converted this position, it would put them at 1 to 19.33, very much in the range with the other buildings. And then if you wouldn't mind flipping over to Exhibit C, where we take a look at some of the neighboring districts. The other thing to consider is the enrollment of Lincoln and its comparison to some of the other school districts in our area. So out in Arlington Heights, 25, they have three administrators at both Thomas and South with enrollments of 882 and 930. Lincoln is currently at 764. Out in District 59, Grove has 948, Friendship has 669, and Holmes has 579, where they all have three administrators. Our two neighboring districts of Prospect Heights, 23, who only have two administrators, they have 520 students, approximately 250 students less than Lincoln. And same thing with River Trails in River Trails 26, has 506 students, again, approximately 260 students less than Lincoln. So those were some of the rationale for the swap, so to speak. And now Mr. Siminski is gonna get into some more specifics of the delineation of the responsibilities and how this would look between the three administrators. And then in addition to myself and Mr. Siminski, if you have any specific questions about this, Ms. Cassie Black would be able to answer them with her special education background.
Good evening. So rolling through the numbers and now taking a look at the delineation of responsibilities, a lot of the responsibilities under that assistant principal, that of student services, I kind of combined the terms there. A lot of those responsibilities on are currently on our student service coordinators. So a lot of those things that are occurring would continue in that capacity. So I know that you know, there was some concern about, okay, so if we have an additional assistant principal, does everybody else's responsibilities get cut in half and, you know, we reap the benefits? It's actually a lot of the current things that they are in charge of would continue under that capacity. The major portion, obviously, would be evaluation. That would be significant. You know, almost 30 evaluations per staff member when it equates to about 60% more evaluations that we have to do in comparison to our administrative counterparts. And then anything that student service coordinator does needs admin approval. So the student service coordinator currently is the only teacher that attends the internal coaches meetings or the AP coordinators meeting, and a lot of the decision making or anything that needs to happen, then she comes back and actually needs to clear with me and Randy anyway. So there's formulaic concerns with that, because again, you have administrative, hopefully, decision making and progress being made in some of those meetings, and everything then again needs to be cleared through us. So at any special ed meeting or any 504 meeting, if there are any adjustments made, either scheduling or otherwise, again, all of that needs to be approved through us first. So again, it's kind of like always that additional step, because they're not able to make that specific decision making. Any instructional assistance schedules or needs that need to occur, again, need to all go through and cleared by us or done by us, because again, it comes back to a personnel issue, because this person is not an administrator. So in total, the idea is that this position, again, in theory, was to help a large branch of the special education responsibilities in collaboration with our psychologist. But we've noticed that, again, because they're the only student service coordinator or without that administrative component, it is rather limiting, and would definitely, we would be able to benefit specifically from that. Any questions? Yes, sir.
What makes somebody a school administrator?
Having a Type 75, so having an actual administrative component on their license, and going through the components of the evaluation. So there are modules set up by the state that actually get you to be certified to be able to evaluate staff. So typically it's in the form of a master's degree with a administrative endorsement. So it's additional schooling, it's additional, typically, like I said, a master's degree, and then it's the ability to actually evaluate staff.
So the state sets requirements for an administrator. You cannot be an administrator, a call administrator, without satisfying the state requirements, whatever they are.
That is correct.
And the requirements, as far as you know, are you have to have a master's degree, and then you have to have other certifications on your license.
Correct. That is correct.
So just to maybe confirm what I think you're saying. So basically, this new position, the assistant principal of student services, would essentially be taking on pretty much all of the roles of the current student services coordinator, plus taking on the roles of, you know, evaluation and, you know, continuing to sit in on those meetings, but being able now to make decisions rather than. Okay.
That is correct. So, in fact, the FTE, as far as the number, I understand that obviously there's a monetary component or financial component difference there. But as far as the FTE, the idea is that it would be the same. So removal of the student service coordinator and then the addition of this person that would take on those responsibilities. That is correct.
Is there any, besides the evaluation, is there any other major, I guess, job responsibility that the assistant principal of student services would be taking on that's new?
We actually talked about that. A big component is the scheduling component. So right now, all scheduling, 100% of the scheduling, has to go through either me or Mr. Steen. And this student service coordinator actually does go above and beyond in creating schedules for our special education population. Even though they are on a teacher contract, they're still in the building throughout June quite a bit, offering their help specifically on that. But again, everything, again, needs to be cleared through us. So the idea is that that component, by them being able to take care of that on their own and being able to structure that and use PowerSchool as well effectively, then it's, again, less hoops to jump through and for us to be able to follow up on. So there are, obviously, as an administrative team, there are additional things that we can problem solve, teamwork. So any of the higher level concerns, any of the any issues that come up specifically with our special education population, having a team approach obviously is very beneficial, because a lot of the times there are personnel conversations occurring, and we can't have our student service coordinator, because they are a teacher, they are on the teacher contract, they are in the union. So for us to talk specifically personnel or adjusting personnel or personnel concerns, it actually gets a little bit awkward when it's when something occurs and she comes to me and says, so do I call this person out, or how do I bring this up? Because Paul, you didn't see it, but I saw it, but I'm their peer, but I'm kind of not, so how do I mention it? How do I go about it? You know, because they do have some administrative responsibilities, but they don't have that administrator hat to be able to say, hey, let's take you aside and let's specifically talk about why this was a concern or how we can problem solve and move this forward. So it goes to me, and then it's me kind of needing to have a conversation with the staff member, but then it pits staff member against staff member, which is a little bit challenging when, again, that whole idea is of that person they want to be able to support in that position, and it's difficult as a peer to necessarily do that. So it's almost like they're running to me and, you know, telling on them. And it's like, well, why would you tell on me? Why would that happen? Well, there's some concerns there. So
I guess my kind of overall comment would be, you know, so obviously it would depend, and I guess we'll talk about this later, about, you know, the salary and how
sure.
that would affect, you know, our budget and our bottom line and everything. But I would have to say that I think in terms of, you know, being budget friendly, I mean, this idea of kind of morphing the student services coordinator into an assistant principal, and that, I mean, that's, I can't think of a better, if we were going to have an assistant, a new assistant, I think that's the best way to do it, because you really are, you're keeping the same FTE. I mean, there will be an increase in salary,
sure.
but I mean, I just think that that was a very smart, budget conscious decision, if we were going to do it. I appreciate that you thought of that, you know, as the avenue to do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, Adam and I actually have had at length quite a few conversations about this, because there are middle schools that are just going more towards this approach of an assistant principal that is logistics and does the scheduling and the day-to-day and the discipline and whatnot, then you do have your special education specific assistant principal. So rather than, we're just going to have two assistant principals and kind of divvy up the grade levels, so it's a little bit less on that. It's more so, you know what, if we have somebody that's specifically focused on with their strength, with their expertise in the special education realm, it helps out quite a bit. So I have seen middle schools take this approach, because special education population has either grown or a 504 population has increased. Compliance and making sure that we're following up with that is always a concern. But having somebody well-versed specifically in that, with the ability then to evaluate those staff members as well, it definitely is a significant advantage. But initially, it was if we're looking at the same job responsibilities as a student service coordinator, it kind of led us to the hey, if this position turns into, morphs into this, then it's not like we're adding somebody else and saying, yep, we're just going to continue to add administrators, because this person already is serving in a pseudo administrative role as it is.
I was just going to say thank you. What you say makes more sense and clarifies everything a
sure.
little better, and what you specifically want. So thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? All right, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Okay. You want to continue then with the curriculum?
So the staffing plan will be brought before the board on March 21st for your approval. Curriculum cycle update. In your board packet was a memo from Cassie outlining what our curriculum topics are going to be for next year. I highlighted that when I did the environmental scan. We don't have a formal presentation on that, but if you had any questions, we'll be happy to take those at this time.
No.
Okay. Also in your packet was communications plan update. I've not given you a copy of the communications plan before. Jenny Quinn and I do this every year, and I just did not put it in your board packet before, but since this is the time of year when we do all of our plans towards strategic planning, I thought you might enjoy seeing it. Again, there's no formal presentation on it, but if you had any questions, we're happy to take those at this time.
Anyone questions on the communications plan? Chair.
There was in the prep for the board meeting, somebody had asked a question about the sending out information in advance. And I actually had a similar question, actually. It's just related to communications in general. The advance notice of what's coming up in the board meetings, so we post it to the website, mm-hmm. and that's our advance notice. But I had actually a couple of people ask me about the idea of, when we're thinking of communications, is there some way to communicate it out via email or something that's more
direct
to the people, because not everybody's going to our website. You know, it's like anything, not going to our website to check and see what's coming up. But people hopefully do read the emails. And, you know, if people felt like, you know, maybe they would be more informed about what's coming up at meetings, if we could think about that.
So am I hearing something like just sending a mass email out with the agenda attached to it?
Yeah, that was basically the
ask. We could do that. It would go out after I meet with the board president and vice president to review the board packet. Would send it out probably like your board packet gets posted on Friday. I always figure you've seen it by Monday. So I would say that on Monday, then I would be comfortable sending it out to the community. We could do that.
So one thing that Jenny Quinn does is when, you know, she posts it on Facebook, and then a lot of times she does a little summary, like, oh, like, you know, even though the agenda's right there, she still says, you know, the board will be discussing about X and Y and Z, and kind of putting it in more layman's terms. And then what the gentleman was saying earlier about how, you know, even though it was on the agenda, we were talking about board policy 6:200 instructional grouping, or, you know, but people might not know, like, oh, does that mean class sizes? I mean, right, so then maybe in that kind of case, it would have been helpful if, you know, even though the agenda, you know, states the official name of the policy, there was that informal, like, oh, and, you know, the board will be discussing sectioning and, you know, including possible class sizes or something. So maybe in that email, along with, you know, attaches the agenda, you know, something reader-friendly kind of summarizing, especially if it's a topic like that where maybe at first glance people might not realize what it is, but... you know, sort of what Jenny's already doing on Facebook, but just now through email.
Okay. Any other comments? Okay. That's communications. We had a communication from Alliance Park neighbor, and Adam followed up with them, and he's going to fill us in.
Thank you again. We received a letter from a homeowner over in the Lions Park neighborhood, a few houses down from Lions Park School, right on Council Trail. In the letter, he stated that he and a few of his neighbors had experienced some flooding in their backyard over a number of years. Initially, he pointed out this. Now, he has not been in the house for a very long time. He pointed out that there was started happening in the early 2010s, and pointed to some work that the school district did at that time. So I reached out to the homeowner and reached out to the representative over at the Public Works Department, and the three of us got together outside of Lions Park and kind of talk through what the issue was with the particular parking lot and where his area was. After some conversation and investigation, it turned out that there wasn't actually any work that was done over the past decade or so. What happened, it's when Lions Park School was built in 1995, 1996. So those issues that occurred with the flooding actually began at that time. So there are, let's say, two separate issues. There's an issue with the parking lot itself, which is Lions Park parking lot. And then there's an issue with the homeowner in the rear of his area, which are kind of independent of one another. The Public Works is going to take a camera and kind of do some investigation to see what possible steps could be alleviated initially. As we know in past conversations, the parking lot project for this particular summer is more of a maintenance project. We're not adding a new scope. We're not adding new spaces. We're not redoing any of the sewer work. So there's possible grading that can be done to help the school district and help the homeowner. However, most likely what would be able to occur is once the purchase of the property on Mullen goes through and that parking lot going forward with the idea of that parking lot being expanded there, would be the time for some trenching and some water detention being taken place and conversations between the school district and the village and the homeowner to be able to address it at the time. So during this summer, we will make some attempts to see by some grading if some flooding could be alleviated, but realistically, most of it would be addressed when we in a larger project in the very near future. Continue conversation between myself, the homeowner, and the Public Works Department of the village.
Does anyone have questions for Adam on that? Okay, I just want to received another letter today, which had a section for you, and I know Dr. Allmiller gave it to you. So I just want to thank you for working with that homeowner and, you know, doing what we can. We want to be good neighbors, and since we're going to be working over there on the parking lot, you know, over the next couple of years, hopefully we can alleviate the problem for them. Yeah. Okay. And then the final item is the discussion of Lincoln Robotics travel.
So the memo is in your packet, which explains the need and a little bit of background and rationale. And some members of the robotics team came up and spoke during community comment section. So just a few things to point out is that first, as pointed out in the memo, the robotics club is a much more in-depth club than our typical club at Lincoln or at any of our elementary schools. It's also different than other of our interscholastic sports. With our interscholastic sports, we have individuals that will qualify for state, but then state is where it stops. Wrestlers, track and field, cross country, no one has the ability to qualify for national competition or world competition. So the idea that the robotics club has qualified for a world competition kind of puts us in the club in a kind of a different situation. So and our board policy states that anytime there is a trip that is out of state or overnight, it needs the board's approval to do so, which is why we're standing here this evening. The other question that comes in was the question about fundraising. There is an additional $1,000 for an entrance fee, and then an additional somewhere between $1,650 and $3,450 for additional funds. And the robotics team had asked for the ability to fundraise for those items, which again, in going with our board policy, that fits in line of them being able to fundraise, but they're coming to you tonight to ask for the board through consensus to allow them to go on the trip to participate in the robotics world competition.
So let me just put it simply, is there anyone on the board that objects to granting consensus? I don't think so. We're really excited for these students and wholeheartedly support their efforts in the trip, and I hope it's a great trip, a successful trip, and very beneficial to all of our students, you know, who are participate. It's a great opportunity, but it's one that you've earned through your hard work, and we hope that you'll make the most of the experience, and we wish you the very best.
Yep.
So good
crush
luck.
It.
Yeah.
Although they have to tell us what the exotic location of the world competition is.
It's Detroit. Well, that's the Motor City, you know. That there's a rich history there, you know. And I think the Motown Museum is in Detroit also, so you might want to ask your parents to check that out. Okay. So we'll move on with the consent agenda. I think we had January 24th meeting. We must have had, everyone was present.
Yep.
Okay, great. Then, is there any other items that anyone would like to, Vicki?
Yeah, could I pull number 2, personnel transactions?
Sure. Any others anyone would like to pull? Why don't we talk about number 2?
So under personnel transactions, the first bullet point says accept the resignation of one administrator. So Cassie, I just wanted to say that, you know, I mean, of course, you know, we're so sad to see you go, but we're so excited and happy for you as you embark upon your new career. And I know this is not goodbye. You're still going to be here for several months. But just, you know, we all just want to say thank you so much for, you know, the 7 years that you've spent here, not just as the assistant superintendent for curriculum and instruction, but, you know, when you were student services director. So, you know, thank you for pouring in so much into the district and into our students and staff.
I wonder, Cassie, if you wouldn't mind taking a minute just to fill the board in and those present on, you know, what you're going to be embarking on in your future endeavor.
Well, as some of you know, for the last 4 years, I've been going to law school, and I will have the opportunity. I graduate in May, and we'll be working for an education law firm, and I'm very excited because I will have the opportunity to blend my background in education and hopefully really be able to blend a match between legal requirements and best practices, and so I am looking forward to this new opportunity. And of course, though, I will definitely miss my time at District 57, and I've had such a wonderful experience here, so I'm also glad I'm here for a few more months, but excited and sad at the same time.
Well, congratulations, and I just want to echo what Vicki said. You know, your work that you've done here over the past years in the interest of the students of this district has been very valuable, and we all really appreciate everything that you've done here, and we wish you the best. So good luck to you.
Okay, then entertain a motion on the consent agenda. Oh, Jerry, did you review the bills?
Yep, everything was fine.
All right, good. I think that covers everything then.
All right, motion to approve the consent agenda. Number 1, minutes of the following Board of Education meetings, regular business meeting, January 24, 2019, open and closed session. Number 2, personnel transactions, accept the resignation of one administrator, approve another year leave of absence of 2 certified employees, accept the retirement of 2 certified employees, accept the resignation from second year leave of absence of 1 certified employee, and approve the resignation of 2 ESP employees. Number 3, financial reports for January 2019, 4, accounts payable bills, 5, approve attorney architect and construction manager, and 6, approve resolution 190221, authorizing intervention in property tax appeal cases.
Second.
Member Chung?
Yes.
Member Compasto?
Yes.
Member Kobus?
Yes.
Vice President Walsh?
Yes.
Member McCluskey?
Yes.
President Sanatar?
Yes. And then
We have one unfinished business item. This is the board policy, which we discussed at the last meeting, 6:200, instructional arrangements. Let me see if I can pull that up. If somebody finds it before me, you can go ahead and read it. Go ahead, Eileen is on the policy committee.
Instructional arrangements, grouping in classes. In the best interest of the district and the students, the superintendent shall have broad discretion in grouping students as the superintendent deems appropriate and proper with the consultation and advice of the Board of Education. The Board of Education shall establish class size guidelines on an annual basis prior to each school year.
Any comments on this? I think it satisfies the concerns of everybody. And, you know, we took specific numbers out, but we also articulated that the board will review the numbers each year and provide guidelines to administration. So,
yeah, I will say that for the first iteration, this is the third one that we've seen. I thought that it would be a good idea to have class size ranges, just to have it, you know, there in black and white and have something to work with. But through the course of the past several months of discussion, I mean, I do think that the best, I do think that this version is the way to go, that each year that particular board can have the opportunity to look at the projected class sizes just like we did tonight and then decide if it's appropriate given, you know, building constraints and the staffing plan and budget, you know, our budget projections and everything. So I think that, you know, what we saw tonight when Dr. Ommeler, when you showed us, you know, the class size ranges and for both this year and the projections for next year, I mean, I think that if each year's board had a chance to look at that and then, you know, in that environment decide, is that appropriate? Are these, you know, the best class sizes for our district, given all those constraints, I think that would be the most fair thing.
Good. Anyone else comments on that? Okay. Then I'll entertain a motion. I'll rush it.
Motion to approve Board Policy 6:200, Instructional Arrangements, Grouping in Classes.
Second.
Yes.
Member Kobus?
Yes.
Vice President Kowalczyk?
Yes.
Member McCluskey?
Yes.
Member Chung?
Yes.
President Sonnenfeld?
Yes. And we have another opportunity at this point in the meeting for community comments. So if anybody would like to address the board, this is your opportunity to do it. Please step forward to the microphone and you're welcome.
Thank you for letting us go to World this year. Thank you very much. Last year they took third place at U.S. Robot in Performance, and this year they're looking to do better that by two positions. So they're actually going for the big one this time. Thank you very much.
Well, good luck and congratulations again.
Congrats.
Would anyone else like to address the board? If not, we'll move on. So we have one new business item. This is another policy, Board Policy 7:270, Administering Medicines to Students. And do you want to explain what happened here?
Yeah, Policy 7:270 was brought to the board back in January. Inadvertently, a section was omitted from the policy when it was brought forward. That section omitted was school district supply of undesignated epinephrine injectors. We're just asking that the board reinstate that piece of the policy.
Mm-hmm. We can vote on that now. Mm-hmm. If anyone like to make a motion?
Motion to approve Board Policy 7:270, Administering Medicines to Students.
Second.
Yes.
Member Chung?
Yes.
Member Contesto?
Yes.
President Sonnenfeld?
Yes. And we have two items for board discussion. The first was something that Vicky had asked that we bring up for discussion. This is the possibility of posting the board packet on the website prior to the meeting. So at the same time, I guess we're talking about today, the agenda being posted on the Monday prior to the meeting. At that same time, any portions of the board packet that are not confidential, not relating to personnel or student issues, could be posted along with the agenda. So this was something that Vicky thought. Do you want to talk about what precipitated this, Vicky?
So I actually spoke with someone last month who made that suggestion that we post both the public packet and the agenda at the same time, so on the Friday prior to the board meeting, rather than waiting to post the public packet after the board meeting. So as you probably know, this is what the village does. They post both at the same time, and this person mentioned that it's been very helpful for the village in terms of strengthening communication and public trust, building trust between the village and the community. So I completely understand if there are certain documents that are confidential and that cannot be posted prior to the meeting. But I think there are definitely items that can, like the previous meeting's minutes or any, you know, presentations or presentation slides. I think that would be very helpful. People would, you know, like to go through those if possible. So I think this is just in that spirit of, as with Jerry's earlier suggestion of kind of, you know, making sure that people know as much as possible in as many different forms as possible. And I think having that information could be helpful for people.
I wonder, from an administration standpoint, is this an overly cumbersome process to go through the packet and differentiate what's suitable for public consumption prior to the meeting and what might be better to be held back?
No.
Okay.
Simply put, no.
I'm glad to hear that. I'm happy to hear that. Any other comments?
I would only suggest that after the meeting, the package be posted, because during the meeting we may make corrections or changes, and I want to make sure that the previous version is superseded by whatever we finalize as part of the meeting. So, especially if there is some change or there's a correction, as you know, the week goes, we go through the week from the time we get the package, there's questions, and then sometimes there's changes, and I want to make sure that whatever is put out is revised accordingly to the way we have it as part of the meeting.
Sounds good. Okay, so everybody is on board with that? Okay, great. Then the other item was a date for a spring community forum. I kind of pushed this off because our last meeting got so late that I didn't want you guys staring at your calendars at midnight. So maybe we can look at our calendars now. And we were talking about a date in April after the election. When is the election? 9th? It's the 2nd?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we have a board meeting on the 4th. There's, of course, the Easter holiday, and there's no school, the Friday before that, is that right, the 19th?
Joe, if I could point out, mm-hmm. The board meeting on the 4th is the, we talked about the superintendent's evaluation closed session and moving that to the 11th, which would open up the 4th for the community forum.
Oh, okay.
That way it would give the board members more time to complete the evaluation documents.
Yeah. Right, and we'll talk more about that in closed session when we discuss superintendent evaluation process. But one of the things that we discussed at our board packet meeting was, so usually that first meeting in April is used where we just meet in closed session. This is what we did last year for sure, maybe the two previous years. We just meet in closed session hashing through Dr. Al Miller's evaluation. I thought that since those materials generally are provided to us the 21st with a packet March 21st meeting, that in order to give the board members more time with that, we would meet, rather than meet the 4th, we'd meet the 11th in closed session. So, and then you would have to, of course, get your materials to me in advance of that. We'll talk about that later. So that's all happening during that time. You're going to be working on your superintendent evaluation. But we could schedule a community forum for the 4th, since everybody was holding that date anyway. How do you feel about that? And while we're talking about the calendar, is everyone available to meet in closed session on April 11th? Can we do that meeting that night?
I will be out of town.
Would you maybe be able to join us by phone that evening?
That is a possibility.
Because if Jerry's the only one with,
we don't know about Brian.
We don't know on Brian. Okay, so we'll have to, let's tentatively plan on doing that. We'll have to get a confirmation from Brian. Now, what about dates? So then the community forum on April 4th, and we were going to ask Mike Cassidy to join us for the community forum. Mm-hmm. The topic is going to be on the TIF. Oh, too bad. Some folks left that I thought might be interested in this. The TIF, and in particularly the TIF's implications for the school district here. So we should probably give Mike Cassidy a couple of different dates. How does the other dates, the first, well, the election's on the 2nd. So the 3rd, the 4th, maybe Monday the 8th. Anyone have thoughts on those? What about Tuesday the 9th?
That's Ed Foundation.
And what about Wednesday the 10th? All right. So I would like to give them three dates. So those are April 3rd, 4th, and 10th.
The 3rd is NSSEO.
Oh, the 3rd is NSSEO.
So maybe
what was wrong with the 8th?
Was
8th
okay? 4th, 8th, and 10th.
Okay. Everyone, how does that look for everyone? 4th, 8th, and 10th? Those are good possibilities, good choices. Okay. You have that, Adam? So you'll communicate with Mike Cassidy and see?
Yep.
We can set that up? Okay, great. Any other concerns, discussion on that? Okay. So at this point, the board does need to convene into a closed session for the purpose of discussing the appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees of the public body. Board action will not take place following closed session. Can I have a motion to convene into closed session?
Motion to convene into closed session.
Second.
Vice President Balcha?
Yes.
Member McCloskey?
Yes.
Member Chung?
Yes.
Member Compasto?
Yes.
Member Kovas?
Yes.
President Sonnenfeld?
Yes.
We're going over to admin.
Oh, we'll go to admin to do that?